Welcome to the Voice of Florida Architecture. I'm your host, Rhonda Hammond, AIA. We're continuing our series, Architecture and You, a collaboration with the Florida Foundation for Architecture, to promote an awareness of the profession's value, not only to the public, but to government officials, policymakers, and to our peers. My co-host for this series is the 2025 chair of the Florida Foundation, Mr. Stephen Ruby, AIA. And he's going to share his vision for the series before he introduces today's guest. Welcome back, Steve.
Well, thank you, Rhonda. It's always great to have conversations with you and your host. I too am excited about this series. We at Florida Foundation for Architecture are so pleased to be joining you in this mission of promoting our profession of architecture. Our vision for the series is to explore with our viewers the spaces we live in, work in, play in, and maybe even dream about. We'll be diving into a topic that affects all of us in so many ways, even if we're not always aware of it. And that's the value of architects and architecture in our daily lives. When we think of architecture, we might picture famous buildings or an eye-catching design. But architecture is so much more than that. It shapes our communities. It influences how we feel in space, helps solve real world problems from housing to climate change to public safety and health. Architects don't just design buildings. They imagine ways for us to live better together. Whether it's a local library, a hospital, a school, a park, or even your own home, there's a lot of thought and care and skill behind every decision made to make those spaces real. In this episode, we'll be exploring an example of why architecture matters, what architects do, and how good design can improve our lives in ways we may not even realize or expect. So today, we are so pleased to be having a conversation with Jerry Sparkman, AIA. Jerry is a founding principal of Sweet Sparkman Architecture, where he has been crafting resilient, thoughtful designs since the firm's inception in 2022. His work reflects deep understanding of coastal environment, emphasizing the integration of local culture, history, and long determined community growth. Jerry's design philosophy, that is to respect the land and the people, and the rest will follow, is very well exemplified by projects like the Bay Park in Sarasota, where he has merged innovative designs with environmental stewardship to create a vibrant public space. And he'll be talking about this as we proceed in our discussion this afternoon. His portfolio spans high-end residential projects, public parks, higher education facilities, and community spaces, all shaped by actively listening and by meticulous approach to financial, physical, social, and environmental factors. With a belief that nature provides an unlimited inspiration, Jerry continues to create spaces that harmonize with their surroundings while meeting the needs of a diverse communities and their requirements. Welcome, Jerry.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
It's a great pleasure. Jerry, you're considered a placemaker on the west coast of Florida. Your specialty is parks and public buildings. What makes these spaces special? What is your secret sauce to creating places that attract people, places where they feel safe, where they can go seek refuge, connect, and feel at one with the environment? So what's your secret sauce?
Secret sauce. That's a good question, Stephen. So the secret sauce, I've been thinking about, what is it? I think the secret sauce for public places that inspire you is the ability of the architect or the designers to listen to the community first. And that's harder to do than I think it seems like. You know, the designer, as you know, Stephen, the designer wants to sit down and design, right? You just can't wait to sort of draw the lines and and make the spaces and make the concepts. But I think the harder task to make the sauce the best it can be is to spend the time listening to the people you're trying to serve first. And there's so many different ways to listen. You know, these park projects are not a solo effort. They never are. They're group efforts. So our colleagues have to be well versed in listening and encourage and inspire the community to speak. And once the community speaks, if you can absorb that, at a certain point, the kind of the dynamic shifts. And I think the community members become the designers in a sense that if you can get them talking enough, they'll guide you in the direction you should be drawing. But you have to encourage them and you have to listen. And if you do it long enough, eventually they're going to give you so much information, you'll have all the tools you need to design something. And that's the fun part, is when you feel like you're sort of just a conduit for the community to play out its aspirations through design.
Do you find, even when you find that get that information and that community input, that is it your you feel your obligation to show alternative solutions to solving some of their problems? And how do you go about communicating that back to the community?
Yeah, I think that's where the professional expertise sort of kicks in. You're expected to kind of show how these ideas come to fruition. And, you know, it can be a technical issue, it can be an environmental issue, it can be all of the above, it can be an emotional issue. You're intuiting what they're saying, and you're giving it some form through design, right? So you do have work to do. I don't mean to suggest you got nothing to do. But I think the front-end work will guide you. And then you come back, and hopefully you're going to see something that they didn't expect. I think that's where the secret sauce, I like this phrase you use, the secret sauce becomes very special to people, is when you can interpret their thoughts and wishes and bring back something they didn't expect. It's the unexpected that yields that kind of that delightful space that people keep coming back to. You know, if you think about, let's say, a playground, you expect there's some kind of play going on, but if you can create spaces where the children and the parents enjoy something they wouldn't have expected otherwise, then you've got something going on. And you know, you talked about earlier on about that nature being a source of inspiration. Often these parks are, they're right at the edge. That's where we work near, and those edges are inspirational. They can be volatile, but they're great sources of inspiration. So you bring somebody close to nature in a purposeful way, that can yield some good experiences.
That's great. But that may lead us into my next question for you. And that's you've been working for many years on the revitalization of the Sarasota Bay Area with your Sarasota Park. This is a work in progress, I know, and it's been emerging and as a is a vital community space right now. What are some of the design challenges that you are facing, and how are you overcoming those? And what makes this park so unique? And it's more than just a green space, but it is a place for community engagement.
Well, at the highest level, it is a form of community engagement. Before it was a park, it's still largely, or the northern portion is largely a parking lot. So the aspiration is that it's not a parking lot. We're converting it into a park. And so that goes back 10 years of searching for what the community wanted. And people way before when we're involved, and our colleagues at agency and the Bay Park Conservancy and all the people involved managed to bring forward about, at this point, probably 10,000 inputs from the community to sort of shape this park. You know, what do you want to do with this 53 acres of public land? Because no one knew, but fortunately, the community had the courage to speak up before it became sort of this private world, you know, this kind of only for a few. And so they held on to it. They created some vision for it, and then the designer stepped in and took those vision ideas and kind of brought them to a fruition. So I can share some of that if you like.
Absolutely. Let's see what you've got here.
Okay, are you seeing the first screen?
There we go.
So there's our beautiful bay. That's what people experience. And I think that goes back to this notion that if you can let nature inspire you, you can take people into a good spot, because that's the view that people experience and they're drawn to. I think they're naturally pulled to this place. So what can you do that and make it even better? Sorry, I'm just trying to advance this now. There we go. Okay, to give you some context, if you can see in that kind of red area, currently it's largely a parking lot still, but one of the aspirations was to convert the parking lot into a park. You know, it sits at the northern edge of the city. The Barrier Islands are to the west where that sunset view was. And they had this idea that we can take this 53 acres and, as most cities have great parks, be a great city with a great park. So that was an aspiration. Originally, it was largely undeveloped and the surrounding properties were undeveloped, and people had the courage back in 2013 to ask the question, what else could we be as a city if we think very carefully about this vital asset, this 53 acres of public land? And they asked quite a few people. These are some of the folks who got engaged to help us understand what their wishes were, all the different community people who were willing to speak up on behalf of Sarasota County. They did that over the course of many, many public meetings. About 5,000 to 6,000 voices were heard. And out of that, it came down to six concepts. These concepts, Stephen, were not from the architects and the designers and landscape planners, landscape architects, all the people involved. They were from the people. So to go back to your earlier question, what's the secret sauce? Getting the community to pull from their own vision what they aspire for the park was the first task, and it's the one that drives everything. So to transform a parking lot into a park was one goal, to make it this oasis of green and blue and green environments. Upper right, very important concept. It's accessible to everyone. No one is excluded. This is a place for everybody to go to. It's sustainable, and it's sort of a regenerative environment. Those were some of the goals the community asked for. I put this slide up here to share with you, Stephen, that this process, I call this slide the slide of patience. Meaning, you know, on the left side is 2013, well before we were involved, and my great colleague Gina Ford is there, you know, 2017, helping community aspire to, you know, what they want to grow up to be. And then here we are in 2025, and we finished about 25% of the park. So again, it's the slide of patience. What it means is that you got to stick in there with your community. You got to hang in there. And if you do, you go through certain steps, like building a TIF area, so you have the financing in place, getting the community involved in the city commission as your partner, all those things matter. And it's been the means through which we can deliver this park. A comparison to the left is really what we were working with from the beginning. And then to the right was the vision that agency and the folks from Sasaki developed in the original master plan. We've built about 25% of it, the bottom section where you see this lagoon cutting through. And the view of the first phase was this, the condos in the TIF district to the left and the Van Wezel to the right, in the center, a commons area. And this is an earlier photograph when the community kind of took it over before it was even done. You can see the shade structure wasn't even completely finished, but the community flocked to it and began to sort of claim it as their own. And again, we simply built their ideas. When you look at great cities and public spaces, you realize that there's always transformation going on. This is one of the earlier shots of this property, well before the land was filled into some areas, before the buildings were built, but it shows how things change over time, and that then in no way are you stuck with what you have. You can always transform it and make it better. We always looking at ways to make people comfortable. Shade studies, how you protect people from the sun, but how you allow the views to go through. And doing really simple studies are fairly abstract at one level, but they're trying to be inspirational to capture the sun where it is and how it makes space. So then we get more particular about it. We start to develop these structures around. This is the first phase, and it's simply about shade and gathering. And you'll see in a minute how it brings people together. So they talked about, they being the community. We want places to gather, green spaces, shade spaces, places for convenience, places to get something to drink, and then places to get access to the water, where the water was filtered and cleaned in many different ways, filtered from all the stormwater that flows off from the city through this park. So it's a large filter at one level, kind of a hidden level. And then in the spaces that you experience, some of these areas are partially in place. As we begin working, we identified them and highlighted them, this being a live oak hammock that was in place. This was an existing sidewalk that kind of transformed over the southern edge of the park. So we used the existing palms to the left and built shade structures to the right, many walking areas throughout the park. And then at the very end, the west side, this is the beach. And this beach actually took the last storms that came through and it performed quite well. So the role of resiliency has ramped up, that the park is for the people to enjoy, but it's also to protect the people. So now we're beginning to sort of redevelop the edges of the park. So it's infrastructure for protection of a community asset. As I mentioned, there's a lot of behind the work, a lot of behind the efforts work with people in public meetings, trying to find out what the community wants and put those on paper in a meaningful way. And sometimes that's to do with economics, sometimes that's to do with cultural vitality. But everyone's voice was welcome, and it was really the voices of the community that made the park what it's going to be. So this is the first phase, and you can see back up for a second. Some of the basic components. There's walking paths all around it. Again, this is about 25% of what will be built. A shade structure, what we call a common ground, a green space, and then the beach at the upper right. And the best part about all this is when you see people take it over and it really becomes theirs. You know, you just sort of you step back and see if it works or not. And when that happens, you realize that's a good role for an architect, Stephen, which is to become sort of a tool for people to make space to gather. And then you realize that the civic quality of life is improving in your community, and you're enabling that.
Joey, you say that this was generated by the inspiration and the input from the community. Now that portions have been built, you go back and reevaluate and get these groups together again and determine is did you meet their goals? Did you exceed their goals?
That's a good question. Yeah, we're always cycling back because a plan, as you know, it's never really fixed. It's never perfect. So as we do one piece, we evaluate, we survey, and we get feedback, and then we modify the plan accordingly. So always reaching back out to the community and say, hey, what worked? What didn't work? And the people of the Bay Park Conservancy, A.G. Laffley and his team, are excellent at taking input and listening and then delivering.
Great. Well, a number of your projects are parks and public facilities along the coast, and sometimes in very environmentally sensitive locations. How do those locations impact your design for creating place?
How do the locations impact the design?
How do they impact your designs?
Sure. Well, as I mentioned, we learned this past year how the location impacts our design when the three storms came rolling across our coast. And as Rhonda knows well, and Becky, that as we're building, we're thinking about the functions that people need and want, but we also need to think about how to protect them with these places. And so this is not really a building, this is a landscape that's built. And we found that the first phase, which has a resilient shoreline, was the area of the park which was least damaged. The northern section, which was not built, it had a lot of hardened edges and asphalt and concrete, got really messed up. And so it taught us that the edges are beautiful at one in one situation, they can be very vulnerable and problematic in another. So all of our work is intended to be cognizant that Mother Nature is inspirational and can be very testy at times. So it's important for us as designers to realize that these parks and these public spaces have to serve us, and part of the service is protection. And that is generally a theme that runs throughout these coastal park projects: resiliency, flooding, wind resistance. And we learn about the subtleties for each park.
And how do you go about solving some of those issues?
Well, in the case of the phase one I just showed you, we built up. That's a natural edge, but you can see where the water is, right? Well, from that point of the water, we built the land up about 12 feet from the mean high water. So where we did that, which is right there, that land was protected. And so the day after the storm, one of the storms, it was Helene, the park was requested to be opened up because it was useful, because it had been built at an elevation that protected it. The lower edges took a beating, But the upper places, the common ground was useful to people. You see where these people are sitting on the right. That's elevation 12. And so elevation was one technique. That's a pretty simple one. You get up higher. Another one has to do with how you allow water to go through the structures if you're building enclosed structures. And then, of course, wind, knowing how to build structures so the wind doesn't damage them. Those are all part of this. Those are the ones that are most difficult because they're happening through storm events. But then there's the more subtle ones about corrosion, for instance. Being on the coast, you have a lot of corrosive environments, so you have to select the right materials.
Very good. Is there anything else you want to show us about your yard?
I'll just flip to the very end because I think that's really what it's all about, is people gathering
Yeah.
and finding ways to gather in meaningful places that feel comfortable and pleasant. And that's what I enjoy most about the Bay Park, is seeing people use it and how it brings people together.
Okay. Last question I have for you, and I can usually ask every person we talk to this question. What project in your career do you think has had the most impact on your client and your community? And what is that impact?
Well, I don't know if it's one project. I think I always like to think the next project is the most impactful. So that's my aspiration. But some of the things I've flipped through are ones that shaped us early on. So for instance, this project it's a simple restroom structure for Sarasota County. When we were in the recession, no one was building anything. So the county was trying to jumpstart the economy and people wanted places to gather. So putting those two together, I think had a big impact on our profession. It was a way to survive a difficult economy. It was a way to improve your community and to give a place for people to go hang out and have a good time. And these are coastal places. This is about Florida. And so I think they're celebrated because they speak to the nature of where we live, water environments, people trying to get to the edge, people needing basic necessities, showers, comfortable places that are elevated, protected from the storms. And all of these projects, I think, add up to really what we hope to do in the next project, which is to immerse in nature in a very careful way. This is Lover's Key down near where you are, Stephen. Ian went through this building at about 120 miles an hour, 10 feet of water. And the park ranger called and said, "Hey, you need to come take a look at this." And I was worried that it was going to be very devastating. And in fact, they lost one railing panel and that was it. So it told me that they valued it to the point that we could build in a very volatile place, allow people to connect with nature, be inspired by nature, see the devastation that could happen if you're not careful, and then next day gather again in architecture. So to be protected. So to answer your question, maybe in a roundabout way, it's the sense of shelter and gathering that these projects are about that probably inspires me the most. This is Siesta Beach. Tim Siebert, you may have known Tim. This is the beach pavilion he did. And we added on to it. And his only comment to me was when he came to talk to me about it, he said, "Well, yeah, build whatever you want, just stay away from my building." So we disconnected from his and tried to celebrate his, and it's still useful. So those are the ones that are most important to me, the ones that are useful to people day in and day out in the most basic way. Going to the beach, going to get a drink, get a sandwich, the simple stuff that architecture provides space for, I think, is what really drives me. This is a picnic shelter. So, for instance, I'm very proud of these picnic shelters. That's all it is. It's just a shelter, but it's precast. It did very well in the storms, and it was pretty simple. And so they're there, they're useful. And that to me is that gets to the basics of architecture. Is it useful? Does it do its job? And if it's beautiful, that's an added bonus, But it's about gathering in public spaces that really turns me on. And we're trying to find ways, this is Selby Gardens, to gather where you get to experience an epiphytic environment. And we're in Sarasota where epiphytes grow. What's that mean? How can you share your local ecology with the world and be inspired as an architect and help people understand in greater depth what the local environment is about? I don't know if that answered your question, but I sure tried.
Very well. As you flip through your slides, I think you kind of they exemplify what we were talking about earlier, that it's everyday architecture that we experience around us every day. It's not the cathedral, it's not the high profile building. It's everyday spaces and everyday environments that we appreciate and that make our lives richer. I
Well
think
said. Yeah, that's very well said. The everyday stuff.
Very good. Rhonda, do you have any questions?
I have no questions. I just wanted to tell Jerry to thank you for showing that we can have beautiful structures that are strong and resilient. They don't have to be just utilitarian. They can be beautiful and engaging as well.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that inspires us as well. We kind of discovered that they can be both.
Jerry, thank you for your time. We
thank
enjoyed
you
the
all.
conversation and be well.
I admire what you all are doing. Keep it up.
Thank you. So I hope you've enjoyed this episode as we explored how the award-winning architect, Jerry Sparkman, his work has enhanced his community, and the secret to his success, his secret ingredient, is listening. Stay tuned as we continue the Architecture and You series. You can find us wherever you stream your podcast. This is Rhonda Hammond, AIA, your host, and my co-host, Steve Ruby, AIA. We thank you for listening to this episode of The Voice of Florida Architecture.